Welcome to the 42nd week of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word. We are in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses' recounting of the law and some of the history that was surrounding the giving of God's law to the people of Israel. Remember, it's the 11th month of the 40th year of the Exodus. Moses knows that it will be only a little bit longer before he has to lie down and die because he doesn't get to go into the promised land. And he wants to go back over all this material with his students one last time. Deuteronomy chapter number 15 is where we want to pick up our recounting of the second law today. And in this, he talks a little bit more about the calendar and how it impacts upon interaction between different members of Israeli society. Deuteronomy 15:1. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release. Now, before we move on, let's remind ourselves that the Israelis were going to be functioning on a 7-year calendar system. It'll be 6 years of work, followed by a 7th year that is off for everyone. There is no regular work done in the 7th year. Then they'll go through that cycle 7 times, and then they'll have a 50th year, which I believe is the first year of the next cycle. And that will result in 2 years off in a row. And this is going to give the people a rest. It's going to give the land a rest, the animals a rest. It's going to be a renewal of the entire nation on the 7th year of this cycle. So this is also going to impact upon indebtedness. So at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release of indebtedness. And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor shall release what he has lent to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor, his brother, because he who is his release has been proclaimed. And for our new listeners, this is how I'm treating the divine name this time through. You'll see it in your text as a special formatting of the word Lord. If you look closely, you'll see it's all caps, but the L is slightly larger font than the other letters in this name. And so this is the divine name, the 4 letters, YHWH, but it means literally he who is. So you shall not exact it from his neighbor, his brother, because he who is his release has been proclaimed. Of a foreigner you may exact it, but whatever is yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. So if somebody goes into debt, they fall on hard times, and so they have to borrow money in order to make ends meet. The Israeli who lends that financial aid, when the 7th year begins, has to write off whatever remains of that debt. Because the 7th year resets debts. Now, the non-Israeli, where there's a business deal that involves some sort of indebtedness, the non-Israeli still is on the hook for whatever financial obligation there might be. But Israelis in Israel, because this is a in-the-land rule, Israelis in Israel must release the indebtedness of other Israelis whenever the 7th year falls, comes around. Now, verse 4, the English Standard Version that we're using this right now says, "But there will be no poor among you." Now, in a few more verses, it will describe how there will always be poor people among you. So I think we need to re-understand the verbal intent of Moses here with these words. I think he means there shouldn't be any poor among you. And the reason why there shouldn't be comes up next. For he who is will bless you in the land that he who is your God is giving you for inheritance to possess, if only you will strictly obey the voice of he who is your God, being careful to do all this commandment that I command you today. For he who is your God will bless you, as he promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow, and you shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you. So Moses is describing in these couple of verses here the ideal situation. Remember, he's addressing the generations of Israelis that will go into the Promised Land. The oldest among them, if you take Joshua and Caleb out, because they're kind of unusual, the oldest among those that Moses is addressing right now are in their 50s. The oldest among them, right around their 60th birthday. And he's telling these leaders and all of those that are following underneath them, there really shouldn't be any poor people in your land if you will just do what God commands. You will be so full of his blessing, no one is going to fall on a hard time. In fact, you will not need to borrow money. You will instead be those that lend money to foreigners. Now, that is not what's going to happen, though, because we know, and this is a spoiler alert, we know that the Israelis will fail repeatedly in the keeping of this covenant. And because of that, they will experience more often the curses of disobedience rather than the blessings of obedience. So when we get to verse number 7, we look at what is likely to happen. This is Moses again. He tells them what they should be doing, but acknowledges, you guys are going to screw this up, and so this is what should happen when that happens. Verse 7. If among you, one of your brothers should become poor in any of the towns within your land that he who is your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. So the rule is, if you do end up with people falling on hard times, people who can't make ends meet within the Israeli community, those of you that have more than enough should very freely help out the person that doesn't have enough. And you need to keep your attitude in check. Verse 9, take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart, and you say, the seventh year, the year of release is near. And then your eye look grudgingly on your poor brother, and you give him nothing. So Moses anticipates, some of you are going to find yourself in this situation I'm describing, where you can help out somebody else that's in need of that help. And you're going to go, the seventh year is going to start pretty soon here. Anything I give to them, it's highly unlikely I'll get that back. So I'm not going to give them anything. Moses says that is an inappropriate, sinful attitude. And if you follow through with it, this is what is going to happen. The poor person is going to cry to he who is against you, and you be guilty of sin. So if you have the ability to help and you don't do it, as an Israeli, you're going to come under God's judgment, because God's command was, help your fellow Israeli out. Verse 10, you shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him, because for this he who is your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. For there shall never cease to be poor in the land, and therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, to the poor in your land. So verse number 11 is not a contradiction of the earlier passage that I highlighted, but rather a reality check. Moses knows as a prophet, and probably suspects as the person who knows these people very, very well, that they are not going to keep God's commandments. They are not going to keep the covenant intact. They're going to get themselves in trouble. There is going to be curses coming upon the land, and therefore there will be poor people. And when that happens, they should do the next best thing, and that is help those poor people out. Be generous. And Jesus, of course, talks about some of these concepts in his Sermon on the Mount and other passages, that anyone that asks of you, you should not turn them away. That's talking about somebody that's in need, that is within your frame of reference, within your sphere of influence. And Jesus says, you need to not close your heart against them. So Jesus was actually taking this passage and expanding on it in the Sermon on the Mount. Verse number 12. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you, and the selling here that we're talking about is he goes into debt. So he is impoverished and he needs you to cover his bills. Well, one of the things that happened in that case is that person became enslaved to you. They became indebted to you and had to work on your behalf. So if your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold or sells himself or herself to you, he shall serve you 6 years, and in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. So still on this idea of the calendar cycle. When the seventh year rolls around, and we're talking about the very beginning of the seventh year, in the year of release, any debt that is owed to you by another Israeli, be they, you know, out there as part of the working poor, so they've got their own job and they're trying to pay you back financially, or if they're so impoverished, they end up becoming your slave. When the seventh year starts, all of that is wiped out. It's gone. The debt is finished. And this was God's way of keeping the Israelis out of debt to one another so that they would always start fresh every seventh year. Now, verse 13 gets into the attitude you should have toward those that are finishing up that indebtedness at the beginning of the seventh year. Verse 13, when you let him go free from you, you shall not let him go empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally out of your flock, out of your threshing floor, and out of your winepress. As he who is your God has blessed you, you shall give to him. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and he who is your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this today. So not only were the Israelis supposed to write off the indebtedness whenever the seventh year began, they were supposed to look at any slave, Israeli slave, that they had under their hand and say, I want to give you something to start fresh with as you leave my service and enjoy this year of rest, and then you'll start the new work cycle at the beginning of next 7 year period. So as a better off, a more well off Israeli, you were supposed to give something, a starter batch, a little bit of seed or a little bit, a few animals, something to help that person stay out of debt, start fresh. And this is a perfect attitude. This is love in its real God-designed description, that you look to others as you would want to be looked upon, that you would help others the way you'd want to be helped, to be treated as you'd want to be treated. And that is, you'd want to have assistance in starting fresh. And so all the Israelis were told to do that for those that had been impoverished with them. And there was a less likelihood, probably, that they would go back into debt if they had something to start fresh with in their new life. Now, verse 16 is where we start seeing the Israeli equivalent to the freedman system of the Greeks and the Romans. And that is, slaves who finish their term of service, who finish their term of indebtedness, and yet they've developed some sort of rapport with the master that they've served. And therefore, they want to now work for that person, to have them as their patron, to have them as their boss, their overseer. And so they would have a special relationship as the client of this patron. So that's the Greek and Roman concept of the freedman. And it was a special status in their society. So here's the Israeli equivalent of that from many centuries earlier. Verse 16. But if he says to you, so here is a slave, a guy that was indebted to you, and he is finishing his term of service. Either he's paying off his own debt, or it's the beginning of the seventh year. So if he says to you, I will not go out from you because he loves you and your household, since he is well off with you. So here is this about to become former slave of yours. But he appreciates the way that you've treated him, how you've looked out for him, how you've been gracious and compassionate and thoughtful. You've been more like a father or a mother to him. And so he says, I really don't want to leave your service, even though that's what the law says I can do. Verse 17, then you shall take an awl, so a piece of equipment that bores holes, and you shall put it through his ear into the door, and he shall be your slave forever. So it's basically piercing his ear and more than likely giving him a special earring to wear from that moment on, which identifies him not as a slave of indebtedness, but rather a servant of choice. Or as the Greek and Roman society would say, a freedman. A former slave who still works for his former owner by choice. And so to your female slave, you shall do the same. Doesn't matter if it's a male or female. If they want to stay on in your employ, then you give them this special pierced earring. It shall not seem hard to you when you let him go free from you, for at half the cost of a hired servant, he has served you 6 years, and so he who is your God will bless you in all that you do. So basically, when you've got somebody that wants to work for you by their own free will, they are going to be a much better employee than a servant who is paying off an indebtedness and not happy about it. And so that's the expectation here, is that God will bless you if you have such a good relationship with these Israelis that fell on hard times and became slaves, that they want to keep working for you after the seventh year rolls around. God will bless you for that. Okay, change of topic. Verse number 19. All the firstborn males that are born of your herd and flock, you shall dedicate to he who is your God. You shall do no work with the firstborn of your herd, nor shear the firstborn of your flock. You shall eat it, you and your household, before he who is your God, year by year, at the place that he who is will choose. So each year, in this Israeli agriculture-based economy, the majority of Israelis would be raising animals. And these animals would have babies. And the firstborn baby, goat, sheep, camel, donkey, automatically belongs to God. And you're not supposed to use it for your own work. You're supposed to give it to God's service. The sacrificial grade animals are already devoted to being butchered out as a sacrifice. And so that's what's mentioned here, is that you don't work with any of these animals. You don't even shear any of the sheep. You don't milk the goats that might be maturing early after having become one of these animals. Instead, you take them with you to the Feast of Tabernacles, and they are among part of your tithe that you will use in celebrating God's glory, God's blessing on your life. And so you share it with the community, your family, your friends, the local Levites, the priests. Verse 20, you shall eat it, you and your household, before he who is your God, year by year, at the place that he who is will choose. But if it has any blemish, if it's lame or blind or any serious blemish whatsoever, you shall not sacrifice it to he who is your God. You shall eat it within your towns. The clean and the unclean alike may eat it, as though it were a gazelle or a deer. Only you shall not eat its blood. You shall pour it on the ground like water. Now, any of these sacrificial animals, sheep, goats, cows, that are firstborn, but they're not sacrificial grade. They've got some sort of deformity, some sort of problem. You can substitute a sacrifice grade animal for them, and then, according to this passage, you have God's permission to butcher and eat the original animal, just as long as you don't defile any of the blood rules that God has given. Now, since we're thinking about going to the central location, the centralized worship location, Moses now goes into talking about the mandatory feasts, the mandatory attendance gatherings every year. And so all adult men who are in good health and who are living in the Promised Land are expected to show up at the tabernacle first, and then later the temple, on these particular days and give these particular sacrifices. So chapter 16, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to he who is your God, for in the month of Abib, he who is your God brought you out of Egypt by night. Now, Abib is another name for the first Jewish month in the spring. It's also called Nisan in some of the documents that you'll see about this. It happens usually starts sometime in latter part of May or March or the beginning of April. So that's the spring months. And this is the month in which the Israelis left Egypt. This is the month in which Passover happens every year, on the 14th. You shall offer the Passover sacrifice to he who is your God, from the flock or the herd, at the place that he who is will choose, to make his name dwell there. So we've seen this before. You have to go to the centralized worship site to observe the Passover meal every year. Verse 3, you shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat it with unleavened bread, the bread of affliction, that is the bread of the slavery. For you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that all the days of your life you may remember the day that you came out of the land of Egypt. No leaven shall be seen with you in your territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the flesh that you sacrifice on the evening of the first day remain until night, until all night until morning. So again, the instructions are, Passover takes place on the 14th. That's when you butcher the animals that you set aside on the 10th. Then as you're eating the meal on the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, you keep unleavened bread as your main bread item all during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, 15th through the 21st. And this is a reminder that that first week after they left Egypt, they traveled quickly and did not have time to let their bread rise. It wasn't until they crossed the Red Sea miraculously that they were able to slow down and start making their starter batch bread again. So every year, they're going to redo that. Verse 5, you may not offer the Passover sacrifice within any of your towns that he who is your God is giving you, but at the place that he who is your God shall choose to make his name dwell in it, there you shall offer the Passover sacrifice in the evening at sunset at the time you came out of Egypt. So, reminder again, you can't observe the Passover sacrifice and meal away from the centralized location, because the animal has to be somehow dedicated at the worship site. Verse 7, you shall cook it and eat it in the place that he who is your God will choose, and in the morning you shall turn and go to your tents. For 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a solemn assembly to he who is your God. You shall do no work on it. We actually talked about this a couple of times now. The first day of unleavened bread, the 15th of the first month, is a day off. The last day, the 21st, is also a day off. And then you just have these special meals at the worship site all week long as an observance of how the nation of Israel got its start by God bringing them out of Egyptian slavery and bringing them through the wilderness toward the promised land. And so every year, the Israelis are supposed to go to the singular worship site and remember how it all started, that they were the sons and the daughters of the living God of the Passover.